titled the message, Blood Defiles the Land. Numbers 35. Starting in verse 30. I'm in the wrong chapter. Here we are. Verse 30. Whoever kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death on the testimony of witnesses. But one witness is not sufficient testimony against a person for the death penalty. Moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. And you shall take no ransom for him who has fled to his city of refuge, that he may return to dwell in the land before the death of the priest. So you shall not pollute the land where you are, for blood defiles the land. And no atonement can be made for the land, for the blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. Therefore do not defile the land which you inhabit, in the midst of which I dwell. For I, the Lord, dwell among the children of Israel. Now there are many things that God is. He has many attributes. He's merciful and gracious. He's compassionate and faithful. He's mighty, but he's also jealous. He's protective and wise, and he's holy, and he's righteous. Now that last one, righteous, means to be in accordance with divine or moral law, or sinless. Now God cannot sin, we all know that. He won't think it, he won't act on it. Sin is any act or thought that goes against God's will and his decree. God cannot be against himself. So it follows that he cannot sin. Now he created all things in perfection. When he created, it was all perfect. It was the stars all the way down to the sand, the rocks to living creatures. They were all untouched by sin in the beginning. Now remember that God is righteous. He cannot create something sinful. Yet humanity today falls under the judgment for its sins. And this sin causes all kinds of wickedness. All kinds of wickednesses, from lies to genocide. And man has yet to produce a cure for it. It's not as if they haven't tried. You know, today, it's inner peace. Get yourself inner peace. Or finding religion. I've heard that phrase used before. If you just find religion, you'll be okay. I think what they're finding is good feelings. I don't think it's religion. Now, some people try to make up for their bad deeds by doing good ones. Like there's a balance. You know, make your good side weigh more than your bad side by heaping up good deeds. Some people feel so guilty, or at least feel that they'll be better if they go into seminary and get a doctorate of divinity. They think that the position of a preacher or priest or what have you absolves them of guilt. But sin, it can't be taken away in degrees. Little by little, chunk by chunk. And man's condition is far worse than these people know. Sin is in the blood. It's in the blood. People keep wondering on TV and in books, you know, why are people so bad? What happened to the world? It just got worse. It's never been so bad. Where do all these evil people come from? What made them act this way? But I tell you, it's our genealogy. It's It's in our DNA. That's what makes people act bad. Adam and Eve begot sinful children. That's what happened. Just as two owls always beget another owl. An owl will never beget a lion, and the children of Adam will never beget a righteous person. It doesn't work that way. We can only transfer our sinful condition down to our children. That's all we can really give them. We will never beget righteous children. And so the burden of our guilt is never taken away. If we were part of a story, what have you, call it the story of humanity, we'd be the bad guys. God would be the only good guy. But yet, in our telling of history, there's a lot of good guys, especially when you listen to people's funerals. You listen to the words that the person says at the funeral. We're all pretty good. But in our telling, there's so many good guys. They're all over the place. There's just a few bad guys. But the good guys, they fight against the bad guys, and they win, for the most part. You know, we're pretty plucky, we're good. The way we tell our stories nowadays, you'd never think there was such an evil man ever. More evil man, I should say, than Adolf Hitler. He's the worst. He raised the bar on what it means to be evil. And he's just the worst that humankind has ever produced in all its history, all the way back to year zero, whatever you want to call it. Well, I've got news for you. He's not the worst sinner since humans started to defile the land. We're all sinners in our blood. In God's eyes, Hitler's no worse than anyone else born of Adam. We're all equally unrighteous. If there's a floor for sin, for the worst sinner, we're all down there in it. We all defile the land in which we inhabit. Now, God says that no atonement can be made for those who defile the land. A man or woman guilty of murder is guilty until they die. Or until they're put to death. I know that's the same thing, but two different actions. Now, do you want to know how exacting God's justice is? Just look at verse 30. It says, the murderer shall be put to death. Now, our translators did a really good job in this verse, but there's something interesting about it. And it's not obvious unless you have like a concordance. The word for murderer and the word for be put to death, they're the same Hebrew word. The exact same one. It could very well read, the murderer shall himself be murdered. Or the slayer, shall be slain. Or the causer of death will have his death caused. It means equal punishment for the sin committed. It's the same word. In other words, only blood can pay for blood. Only the blood of the one who sinned can make atonement for the blood that fell to the ground because of that sin. It's exactly equal. God won't accept anything else, least of all money. The ransom price is blood. This is not a fine you can make or pay and make it all go away. It says, moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. No pigeons, no doves, no goats, no bulls, blood for blood. God only takes payment for sin in blood. Now, that won't stop us from trying to find some sort of loophole. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 12. I'm sorry, chapter 21. What if the land is defiled by a murder, yet no one saw it and no one knows who did it? Would God curse the land on which these innocent people toil for sustenance? Let's read chapter 21, starting in verse 1. If anyone is found slain, lying in the field in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess, and it is not known who killed him, then your elders and your judges shall go out and measure the distance from the slain man to the surrounding cities. And it shall be that the elders of the city nearest to the slain man will take a heifer which has not been worked and which is not pulled with a yoke. The elders of that city shall bring the heifer down to a valley with flowing water, which is neither plowed nor sown. And they shall break the heifer's neck there in the valley. Then the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come near, for the Lord your God has chosen them to minister to him and to bless in the name of the Lord. By their word, every controversy and every assault shall be settled. And all the elders of that city nearest to the slain man shall wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the valley. Then they shall answer and say, our hands have not shed this blood, nor have our eyes seen it. Provide atonement, O Lord, for your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not lay innocent blood to the charge of your people Israel. An atonement shall be provided on their behalf for the blood. If the land is defiled by blood, no matter if the murderer is known or is unknown, the only payment that God will accept is blood. Either by the one who committed the murder or by an innocent substitute. Now, do you recall the conversation God had with Adam in the garden? He told Adam, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. You shall surely die. And before Eve was tempted by Satan, she told him, Satan, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Now, before Eve ate that fruit, there were at least four people who knew what would happen if she ate that. That was Adam, Eve, God, and Satan. We know of at least those four. They all knew eating that fruit would result in death. But that's not what Satan told Eve. He told her, you will not surely die. And she ate that fruit. Then Adam ate that fruit. And just as God said, they surely died. They died spiritually. Spiritually. Cut off from God, from communion with God. A death had just occurred when they ate. And therefore the land was defiled by blood. The murderers of Adam and Eve must pay the ransom. Justice demands blood. They died. Somebody killed them. Justice demands the blood of the murderers, which are Adam and Eve. Only their blood can take away the guilt of the land. They will die if that happens, but there will be justice. And God is just. Unless the ransom can be paid by an innocent substitute, one who is not murdered, one whose blood is not defiled by sin, and God provided that substitute himself. He had a son named Jesus, and he was God's only son. The father of Jesus was not Joseph, but God himself. And so the sin of Adam was not transferred to him. Now, how do we know this? God himself says of Jesus, "You are my son. Today I have begotten you." Remember how Adam and Eve begot people? They were all full of sin. Then God begot someone. And that someone had no sin. Adam did not beget Jesus. And therefore the stain of Adam's race did not touch him at his birth. Yet at the appointed time, God made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. Why did Jesus die? To be our substitute and to pay the blood ransom. We defiled the land with murder. We did. Every one of us. Whether the stories they tell about us are good, or we're the good guys, or whether we're the bad guys. We defiled it. That was our fault. Yet it was God's own Son who took the burden of death upon himself because of his great love with which he loved us. God declared this would happen before it even happened. One way he did it was through Elihu in the book of Job. He says to Job and his three friends, "Yes, his soul," that is a person's soul, "yes, his soul draws near the pit and his life to the executioners." Now, what does that mean? It means justice is about to be satisfied by our blood. They're drawing near to the pit. That's death. The wages of sin is not money. It's not lands. It's not cattle. The wages of sin is death. Then Elihu reveals this little prophecy here. "If there is a messenger for him, a mediator, one among the thousand, to show man God's uprightness, then he," God, "is gracious to him and says, 'Deliver him from going down to the pit. I have found a ransom.'" I have found a ransom. Now, we didn't find that ransom. God said, "I found that ransom." We didn't go to God. He came to us. He had to. We didn't ask the Messiah to even die for us. The Bible says the Messiah died for us while we were still sinners. Now, is that okay with you? Do you find it reprehensible and shameful and embarrassing that God had to send his only son to die in your place because, A, you could not become righteous by yourself or go to him, and you would not seek his face? You could not, would not. Or, instead, is that your peace? Do you see him as your shield and exceeding great reward? Or let me ask you this instead. When justice comes, and if you like to think of something, maybe that angel of death back in Exodus. When justice comes, do you want to pay for the blood you spilled on God's land with your own blood? Or will you plead the blood of Jesus Christ, the substitute? Either way, it must be paid in blood. Now, I know whose blood I want on my hands when I am before the throne of mercy. And don't be worried if you feel you are late to the game, as it were. And perhaps there have been too many people claiming Christ's righteous blood. Maybe he just can't do anything for you. You know, you're too old. You sin too much. I tell you, if you can hear His voice today. If you hear it, plead the blood, His blood, not your own. It flows as if from a fountain that will not run dry. And there is enough of His blood to cover not only your hands, but your entire body. There's a phrase in a song that says, "My sin had left a crimson stain." And that just wasn't on the pinky. That was the whole body. He says He washed it white as snow. And I'll leave you with a verse from a hymn by Ed Hale, which we sing sometimes, "Oh, How Merciful." It says, "I'm not ashamed of all Thy grace when Thou came and took my place. Blessed Lord, how merciful Thou wast to me." And when this world ceases to be, this is the part that drew me, eternal blood will speak for me. Blessed Lord, how merciful Thou wast to me. May the Lord be honored and glorified by this message. Drew, will you close us, please?